learning how to learn is very important. That's what's going to keep you continuously getting better. And if you keep doing good work, there's always going to be work for you.
Let's get started.
Bienvenido a otro episodio de Hipertrophy,
un podcast que gira en torno al entrenamiento de fuerza convencional, la nutrición en estética corporal y otros hábitos importantes como el sueño, el descanso y la gestión del estrés.
Todo desde la teoría hasta la práctica. Nuestra misión
es reducir la brecha de información que existe en México,
aportando un pensamiento crítico y práctico.
Sin más preámbulos, comenzamos.
Hello everyone. We're gonna have a kind of a different podcast today because we have a very, very, very special guest, Alberto Núñez, who is not only one of the greatest natural bodybuilding coaches, but he's himself an athlete as well. Someone that I think it's not surprised to say or to hear me say that I admire a lot and who have I learned a lot from as well. So first of all, how are you doing today, Juan, Sergio, Dani, Berto?
This is early for me because I like you guys. Yeah. No. Mucho gusto estar aquí, and I can talk about natural bodybuilding at 3 a.m, 4 a.m. I love this stuff. So I got some good friends to talk to with today, and hopefully we bring up some good topics, share some good experiences, and honestly, at the end, learn from each other.
¿Qué les puedo decir? Yo estoy más que feliz de tener a Alberto de invitado. Un gusto verlos a ustedes también. Y pues nada, muy emocionado de los temas que vamos a estar hablando el día de hoy, porque no puedo pensar en alguien más apropiado para hablar de coaching online que Alberto. Así que será un placer.
¿Qué tal? Buen día a todos. Berto, first of all, it's an honor to have you here with us. And I need to say thank you for all the knowledge that you transmit to us in Instagram, in the 3D MJ journey, about a lot of knowledge that we are doing right now with our clients, with our process, that I need to say thank you, and it's an honor to have you here. Como pueden ver, es creo que es la persona, uno de los principales referentes para mí, el cómo lleva a cabo su proceso como atleta, el cómo lleva el coaching con atletas de alto nivel. En mi caso, un atleta, one of your athletes, Dirk Kemmerich, is like an idol for me. So I learned a lot from both of you. And Berto, welcome to your home.
So I'm doing great. I gotta admit, I'm nervous because I really don't speak English very well. But let's do my effort and go ahead because we have a very interesting guest. And damn, it's just a lot of knowledge, like Sergio said, right? So what we want to talk about today is about center person coaching. And it's how we take decisions to try to individualize a program and strategy. And even if it's not evidence-based, quote unquote, because it's important to say that evidence-based is not based on data, and that's it. It's based on our experience, on capabilities, opportunities, motivation of our clients. And that's where the absence of evidence may have an impact here. So let's got to try this. I don't know what's going to happen, but let's go evaluate and take decisions. So I don't know if anyone want to start. So that's my introduction. That's the subject today. And let's get rocking.
I think we're going to give the microphone to Lau, which is also a client of Berto. So please guide us through this maze, Lau.
Thank you, Dani. It's a pleasure. And one of the things I think I like the most about you as a coach is that you're not married to a way of doing things. Like, I can hear you talk about a recent paper, but also I can hear you talk about something you saw John Meadows doing like a long time ago. I can hear you talk about how these professional bodybuilding athletes in the enhanced side can be doing some things that would be interesting for us. And because they are enhanced, we can see the result faster than we can see it on our natural clients. So I think the first question would be, who do you learn from, Berto? And how do you go about your own learning process as someone who has been in the industry for many, many years, and someone could say he has seen it all, but I know you keep learning and you keep loving this stuff as much as the first day you started coaching.
Yeah, man. Knowledge is just everywhere. I think especially of late, I switch interests a little bit. And I think a big interest for me lately has been how other sports, develop their athletes. And for example, one thing that became very apparent to me is it, especially, within the evidence-based circle, sometimes it's really just about eating your vegetables, getting your protein in, and there's no seasoning on the meal, right? So there's no fun aspect. And that's something that I see a lot of other sports do. There's maybe certain drills that you're seeing, football players do, basketball players do, track athletes do, that you're this is the most optimal thing, but it adds a lot of fun and a game element to the training. And all of a sudden it hit me. It's I remember whenever I've made the best progress personally, I can say that I was having a lot of fun in the gym. And I think that's why it's important to not just have the program make sense from a scientific perspective, from an adaptive perspective, but also have it make sense for the athlete, and that they really like deadlifting. They're real strong deadlifters. And when they deadlift, they feel a certain self autonomy and self belief because they deadlift, 25% more weight than the average person or someone who's really strong at their body weight. So, we're going to have deadlifts in every once in a while. So, I guess at this point I see the whole world through bodybuilding. If I am reading a book by a particular author on a topic that has nothing to do with bodybuilding, all I see is bodybuilding and how I can apply this to this world. So, at a certain point, I'm real specialized when it comes to this, and everything I get, I go get a donut in the morning and I see the bakery and how it's run. And I'm how can I apply some of these systems, or am I using some of these systems when it comes to running, my systems with athletes. Right. So it's everywhere. It's everywhere. Eventually everything, becomes everything becomes bodybuilding, in my case.
And I must admit, Alberto, I first knew about you a while back through Omar Visuv. You were a guest in one of his videos. I think it was about a certain technique in the bicep curl, something like that. The title was something along the lines, "Natural Bodybuilder teaches you how to do a bicep curl," something along those lines. I don't really quite remember. But that was the first time I actually heard or read the term natural bodybuilding as a possibility, because I used to think that such thing didn't exist. And to come full circle and to actually get to talk to you again through this podcast and to learn from you, and being in this day and age of social media, like Lau already mentioned, it gets quite complicated, at least in my experience and what I can see in social media. And you do a really great job, man, because we have the trend nowadays of social media and instant content and instant gratification, and also putting out the most controversial content and getting the likes, getting the shares, but not in your case. You still managed to be relevant in the realm of bodybuilding, but also knowledgeable, and also dedicate yourself to your craft, which is coaching, and not just social media. So one thing I wanted to ask you is, how do you manage to do that? How can we balance social media creation, content, and actual coaching?
Man, it's probably the slower path, and I think that's what discourages people sometimes. That you can have instant impact by causing some sort of controversy, from almost being like a misbehaving child, right? It's like throwing a fit, and it's like, okay, now all eyes and attention are on you. But that just, you know, one thing about the fitness industry is that it recycles people like very quickly. And really the only thing I've seen that makes people, because there's some really good, for example, like top IFBB pros that, or even like big influencers from, you know, 5-10 years ago, that if you ask the kids if they know who they are, like they're like, no, I have no clue who Dana Lynn Bailey is. Right. So the only thing I've seen that really keeps people afloat is probably just continuous work on your education. Because even though today we're going to discuss a little bit about like improvising and you know, being data driven in many ways, not just when it comes to the literature, I do think that is like the backbone of it, because learning how to learn is very important. That's what's going to keep you continuously getting better. And if you keep doing good work, there's always going to be work for you. There's always going to be a seat for you at the table. So I think for me, that's been the biggest thing. It's just like, I don't want to be recycled. I don't want to burn out quickly. I want to focus on just doing good work continuously, getting better at my craft in like every way possible. And that's how you stay here long enough. Cause yeah, it's crazy. Like I ask these kids about, I don't know, Christian Guzman. I'm like, do you know who Christian Guzman is? Cause I'm always trying to get a feel. I'm always trying to see where everyone's at. I go to this gym here where there's a lot of really young people, and they're like, I have no idea who that is. And I'm like, how do you not know who that is? Like that used to be like the ruler of the influencer world. Right. So yeah, it's a predatory industry, right? Not just, I think we think of like when it comes to the athletes, but also like the people who we think are making it and are doing well, they get used and then forgotten. And I don't ever want to be that.
Yeah. I gotta admit, I think I was, or sometimes I am, that kind of person that is like, damn, let's post something that it's gonna be noisy, no? And I really tend to do that sometimes. And then I say, damn, it's not the perspective I want to give. Then I just go the other way around. I remember what I want to do. And I think that's okay too. I have the right to make mistakes and then go ahead again, right? So, but I try to do my best. I try to share, ¿cómo se dice cuando es matizado? Una perspectiva más matizada. And try to do all the angles and not just my preference, right? So, and here's where I want to start in the subject. So, when we are coaching, there's no identical client ever, right? Everyone's have a different context, different objectives, even if they're objective is fat loss or gaining muscle. It will be a different perspective for everybody. Right. So how we abort that kind of things when we say, when somebody said, tell to us, I want to gain muscle. What I have to do? Train weights, right? And close to failure and eat a lot of protein, surplus calorie, right? But that's what we see in the practice, what it's going to look like. It's really, really going to be different in everyone. So in this perspective, what we have to ask the client to know his context and then make decisions.
Yeah, you know, it's very basic what makes people progress, essentially. I think the biggest obstacle, and I think this goes for anybody, it just looks different on people, is going to be the human behavior aspect of it, right? Like I remember when the lockdowns happened here in the US, I'm like, okay, well, that makes sense. Good luck getting American people to like follow rules. You know, it's a country of like cavaliers. That's not going to happen. Human behavior, right? If everyone would have stayed indoors for 3 weeks, we would have been a little bit better off, but that's just not going to work. So for bodybuilding purposes, the exact same thing. It's like, I think one of the biggest things I try to read on is, what's the person's personality, right? And how can I leverage it to do positive things? and how can I leverage, or what mistakes are they also prone to making based off like just what I'm picking up? Eventually, as you see more and more, you're like, oh, okay, this person reminds me of like this person from like, you know, 8 years ago that I trade with. And these are the mistakes they're going to do, but this is how I can use their unique, I guess, strong points to help them excel. But I think it starts there. It's like, all right, like trying to get to know the person, trying to get them to open up so you can see what they're really like, and then design a program that fits them from the human element. I'd say after that, this is probably what I'm at the end most interested in, regardless of how high level the athlete is I want to give them the tools so that they can, for the rest of their life, at least do the bare minimum. Because I remember when I go back to maybe my first set of athletes, my Gen 1 athletes, I'm almost ashamed because so many of them aren't even doing the bare minimum for themselves anymore. So I compare this to, you know, because I work with a lot of professional bodybuilders or high level bodybuilders, but it's very similar to the situation that maybe college coaches here in the US have with big programs where they have athletes come in and all these athletes, you know, they swear they're going to go pro and make it, right? And it's like, no kid, you should probably pay attention in math class. You should probably get an education while you're here so that you can be set up for the most important part, like life after football. In our case, it's like general health. So I guess those are my two main points, is that I try to see what they're like, have something that fits their personality type, regardless of what goal we're doing. My main objective, like at the end, is always going to be, it's like, I always want this person to be active. I always want this person to, you know, eat a generally healthy diet. I want this person to, you know, do all these things in their life, like every day, that are almost passive to them eventually, that just puts them in a great place so that, like, you know, 25 years later down the road, I don't run into them again. And I'm like, oh my God, you're like 50 pounds overweight. You don't even like train. You don't take care of yourself. So I guess those are my two main objectives, regardless of like where the athlete is. It's like, hey, like, let's set up a healthy lifestyle, because like, maybe bodybuilding might not be this high of a priority in your life's list, like 10 years from now. But the only way you do that, the only way you hide the pill, is to like really get to know your athlete and have it be as passive as possible by just acknowledging the individual that they are.
I wanted to ask this because almost everyone I had the opportunity to teach is like, then which equation should I use? Which is the better distribution of macronutrients? No? And it's like, here's your diet, follow it, and that's it. And I think you may give a guide, but it's like, what were the challenge you become with, right? And from there, let's evaluate opportunities, capabilities, and tools, what we're going to use to make this change. And that's what I wanted to ask. I don't know if anyone.
Ooh. Well, I'd like to hear you guys' opinion on this one, and then I'll butt in.
I'm trying to keep myself muted because I don't want to take the microphone right away. I'm trying to be polite here, as my fictitious home can tell I'm an educated, rich person. But yeah, I think it's super interesting, the point that Juan brings up, because it happens to me all the time. And to say, compromised athletes, well, not compromised, I think that the word would be a different one. But you work with elite people, Alberto. The one that comes to mind is, for me, Dirk. I mean, it's insane, the level of conditioning from Dirk. But what it's really fascinating to me, it's, let's say, the post-show for Dirk. He doesn't go apeshit, you know, with the calories. He doesn't do anything crazy because he has these solid foundations of habit, of nutrition, of training, of living the life as somebody healthy overall, which I think he gets greatly from you. And I think that can translate into directly or practice, because we're not trying to teach you, here's your nutrition plan, follow it. If you don't eat this meal during breakfast, then you fail your plan, or if you don't train with, let's say, plus 20 sets or something, you fail your training plan, your intervention. It's not about that. I think the coaching side of things, it's beyond those things. I think those are just merely tools, at least for me, and I'm sure for also Lau, Juan, Sergio. But that's actually the challenge and becomes a human sort of challenge in the sense of how to communicate this. How can we talk, have the talk with our clients, with ourselves even, to understand that there are periods for starvation, there are periods for less starvation, but it is all within the foundation of a healthy lifestyle and good habits, I think.
I think it's definitely a tricky one because, for example, talking about me, I've grew up with a family in which my mom likes to exercise, likes to eat vegetables and lean protein. My dad loves sports. My sister was a gymnast and a track and field athlete. So for my family, like, our vacations involve going to run to the beach, for example. So for me, I think one of the hardest things to learn is that most people don't come from those backgrounds. Most people don't have like this inherent enjoy for moving, right? Most people find on food the relief from the stress of work and life. But one thing that I think I have improved a lot is to be able to read like between the lines and trying to see which, like, it's like deciding which load someone should start with in the lifting room. Like, you know, when you have someone who you haven't seen lift ever, and one of the things people ask you, where should I start? And you try to give them something that challenges them, because if it doesn't challenge you, you're not gonna buy in because it's boring. But not so much that you think that bar is gonna crush him or her. So I think over the years I have developed like that sense of trying to meet clients where they at. And I think I do something like really similar to you. Like most people, at least the people that I tend to work with, general population, like I have now some athletes, but like the difficulties are pretty much the similar ones. So I know which things I have done in the past that didn't serve well. For example, giving macros to people when they're not even ready, or they don't find it useful to dedicate this amount of time to tracking and measuring things. So that's like giving someone a 100 kilogram squat for 10 reps when they can't even lift the bar only. So I think it's a very long answer, but in short words, listening and also observing people who are around you, who are not necessarily your clients, but for example, now when I go to a dinner or to a party or to a, I observe people and see how they behave with nutrition, with training, and that's what I learned from how people behave with those things. And most of my clients are going to fall in those terms, at least in the beginning. So I have something to start with that's not going to, that's going to propel them forward instead of them not wanting to do this again ever because they don't feel they can't do it, which I think is one of the biggest mistakes sometimes as coaches do, that we end up being one of those coaches that maybe put the bar so high that then the athletes or the clients never want to work out again or never want to eat healthy again.
I used to ask for my client to take pictures of their boots, and then I do my observations, right? So now I don't say this is not a good choice. It's a meat with a lot of fat. There's not many vegetables. Now I ask, what else were available there? Were there any other restaurant, any other food you can order? Why didn't you order that? Why did you choose this one? And don't you like the other one? You think this is the best option you can get for your purposes, et cetera, et cetera. And I tend to look around, even if I'm not there, what is your environment? Where are you? What you used to do and what is it around? So we maybe try something else, some other restaurant, some other dinner, no? I don't know. But I don't tend to tell you, you're doing it wrong. You have to change it. It's, why are you doing this? And why are you not doing the other thing? So I think that's like my, I feel that's my progress as a coach. I don't tend to do my perspectives. It's like, where you think you are at and what you think you can do better. Thank you.
Well, you know something, Berto? I'm actually, I keep giving a personal training in person, and a lot of my clients, the main struggle is that they want, a lot of people want immediate results, you know? So first of all, change this perspective that we are not going to make the final change or the best version like in 2-3 months, you know? We can go forward a lot, but I try to make them to think that we are not here just training to get big or to lose fat, you know? We can make a good decisions that take us to a best version in our person and professional meaning, you know, because here in Mexico, we have like a mentality that if you want to achieve a good physique, you need to sacrifice a lot of things. And it's like, or you do the things 100% good, or you better don't do it, you know? So it's like, this game is not about that. I want you to think about your journey, enjoy it, keep making good habits, and promote a healthy lifestyle, you know, that it's going to give you a better version of yourself, but not just in the gym, in your life. And I think that I don't want to talk a lot more because I want to keep listening to you, but I think that is one of the main things that I try to do, transmit to my clients that it's not only workout in the gym and that's all. You need to think about all the other, your environment and how you can improve in each areas.
Yeah, I think one thing you guys mentioned that happens frequently with just about everyone. Like even I'd say 80% of the people I work with are kind of in a similar situation. That is that, you know, they come into this world and they feel like kind of incompetent almost. And I think where I try to leverage this, and this is especially easier with maybe adults that have lived a little bit longer. I try to remind them that in maybe a different world, they're much more competent. So whether this is as a student, whether this is in their professional life, whether this is as a parent, it's like that's who you can be in fitness, you know, like just how is objective and calculated and sharp and as efficient as you are in that world, there's no reason why we can't bring this here. And all of a sudden they're like, oh yeah, like, you know, I didn't start out great at this. I put in the work. There was a lot of ugly moments. But eventually I got to this point where now I'm really good in my career. now I'm really good at, you know, being a mother, you know, that sort of deal. And all of a sudden, it just gives them perspective that it's just like, yeah, it's just about being consistent, exposing yourself to things. And over time, it just kind of becomes you, and you almost don't think about it. Because at the end, what we are trying to do is almost have some sort of cultural rewiring of sorts. Because actually, I was just reminded of this recently. I spent 2 weeks with Cynthia's family, and her family's way more Mexican than my family, in that it's all Mexican cuisine. Like sometimes in the morning, it's like, really, we're having bread and coffee? Like that's kind of it. It's just so different from my usual. And it's crazy because there was probably a point in my life where I'm like, you know what? Yeah, let's do this. Like I can do bread and coffee. I'll just do two breads and some coffee and I'm good. And now it feels so weird. It feels so different. I got here in a very passive way where for me, when my clients get exposed to those situations, I'm almost worried for them, because then I'm like, oh, you're going to see how great that life was. And you're just going to like lose control and resort back to previous versions of yourself. But eventually, if you stick around long enough and you start to see the receipts in this world kind of start to amount and pay off into something, you almost miss this when you're in situations like that. Like whether it's those 2 weeks with her family, or we're at a restaurant and I'm ordering lasagna or something, like part of me is always like, man, like I kind of miss my fresh fruit, you know? I kind of miss the way I cook my fish, which sounds crazy to people, but eventually like that is what takes place. It's a cultural rewiring of sorts, where that's why I like the word for bodybuilding in Spanish, because it kind of encompasses that. It's físico culturismo, right? Which is like, oh, there's a culture aspect to it. Like you're almost living in a different way, but you don't realize it. So yeah, cultural rewiring is almost something you have to do, where like, this is just how you live your life. You know, it's like, hey, you say no to that second episode of Netflix because you need to get to bed early so that you can get some good sleep. These all become things that just become part of your normal, which I think for people who they haven't seen the returns yet, it's very hard to. But as you start to make progress in this, it's like now, I don't know, food that might be a little plain to you, it's more multidimensional. It's more than just like, yeah, like for me, I can honestly say this. Okay, that bread that I had with her family is much tastier than blueberries, but blueberries has like a deeper meaning to it. There's so many other things outside of just the taste that come with it. It's going to be like what it's done for me, what I know that potentially this can do for me when it comes to like a healthy lifestyle and like living longer and aging better. So it's hard to explain that to someone who is, you know, can't even swim. So we have to start at like the shallow side of the pool. But eventually, what I have found is, again, this works the best. It's just like, hey, you're very competent at this. I will find that one thing. If it's a young kid, it's like, dude, you're really good at Minecraft, that video game or something. It's like you could be that dude here. It's just going to take some time, basically.
I can totally relate as a proud Mexican. I went to visit my family during the holidays. And for dinner, not so much breakfast, but for dinner, it was like cookies and some, and that was pretty much it, maybe little bit of fruit. But I was like, guys, where's the protein? Don't you have any veggies this time of day? You know, stuff like that. But for us, it's just so customary. It's like we do it not only because as bodybuilders, because it becomes part of who you are as a person, not just the bodybuilding side of things. So I can totally relate. And to communicate why we do things, it's really complex, man. So that's what's really interesting about hearing your perspective. And also in regards to your perspective, Berto, you're not also one of the best natural bodybuilding coaches, but you're also an athlete yourself. I wanted to ask, because sometimes this discussion sparks up that people don't need to be athletes. They don't need to walk the walk to be great coaches. And perhaps we can agree, maybe it can be the case. But what do you think? Do you think being a natural bodybuilding athlete, not just coach, gives you a certain edge, a certain understanding of the process that perhaps you couldn't have without the athlete side of things?
I don't know that so much the athlete thing is more so that I'm just generally still very interested in figuring out ways to make myself progress, right? I think I think really the only thing I leverage from the athlete side of things is I think sometimes athletes feel this immense pressure, and I can relate to what that feels like, you know, to like, shoot, I'm going to compete. I'm going to see how this thing I've been working on for very long is going to do, right? There's a lot of pressure associated with that. But I think what, and this is why I don't get, I think sometimes coaches that kind of reprioritize themselves, like usually for the worse, because it's like the only way you're going to, like, I feel like a phony if I wasn't living this life myself, you know, as best as I could anyways. So I think that's where I gain leverage, is that, like, you know, I have my own personal goals. I try to do as best as I can. I'm not perfect, but I try to do as best as I can every day. I'm generally still very curious because I really love this thing and I want to figure out ways, like, not just within, but like for selfish reasons, like, okay, what can I do to continually better my system so that I get, you know, better and more predictable results. So I think that's probably more important than, like, is your coach an elite athlete? Because shoot, there's a lot of elite athletes. I don't think people understand. It's like, it doesn't matter what they do. Like, I've seen the weirdest things, and it does. I've seen guys come back with cross serrations in their outer quads after like 3 weeks of training legs for the first time ever. You know, it's like, okay, that's not fair. So, like, you can't go by just that. But what you can go by is, like, I guess the spirit animal that lives inside the coach. It's like, okay, if you see that they're really still interested in this, that they're not just doing this as a job, they really, really, like, love this stuff. I think that sort of passion is what you're looking for.
I totally agree with that. And sorry for the background noise. I'm on the pet's room and my neighbors are deciding to do the laundry right now. But I totally agree with you, Berto. And I really think that the coaches that are the most interested in their own processes and are in love with their training are probably the ones that do best, because I don't know. I think it's hard to be really good at something that doesn't matter to you anymore as much as it used to be. And I can understand it's a long journey. Like, these physiques that we admire have more than a decade under their belts. So as any other relationship, there's going to be times, I mean, the relationship with your training, with your own process, there's going to be times that you're not going to be like in the moon, like when you first meet someone or you're dating. Or there's going to be times that perhaps you're going through your own struggles and maybe you don't enjoy training as much as sometimes you do. But in the end, those who are able to keep their own processes like in a high priority are the ones also that are gonna use themselves as these guinea pigs to try out things that they have seen in the research, that they have seen other coaches are doing, that maybe other athletes in other sports are doing, like you mentioned at the beginning. And with that in mind, one question that I wanted to ask you, because I know you reflect about this a lot, is in which things, because I'm sure there are some, you've shifted your mind over the past year that I think we have, like, many interesting takes, for example, on the volume side, on the deload side, the training to failure or the proximity to failure. Those are the things, the range of motion. There have been many things that have been in the research recently, and then you can talk about it probably more than myself. Better than myself that I can't. But has any of these things shifted your mind or your coaching in some way, like talking about the last year?
Yeah, I guess it's funny because even science is ruled by people at the end. So if there is like one thing that that I'd critique the scientific world on a little bit, is it even they themselves like sometimes don't tend to listen to each other, or don't try to leverage the how much better this one person is at this one thing compared to another, and I think that's the big one. It's like there's a lot of people doing good work, and I don't mean people who are like just only doing research, but people who kind of go both ways. They're like in the research and they're also out there. I think they kind of fall into the same traps that I think bodybuilding coaches fall into, is where it's like, you know what, I don't care if it's working for that coach because like they're from a different tribe, they're from a different camp. I don't even want to look that way. So I think that's one thing that I've seen like more clearly take place like this year, where I'm like there's just not that sort of communication, at least not publicly. And I think the consumer can kind of see that, and it confuses them, where they're just like, hey, could you guys just sit down together and like hash this out so that we can like know what to do next with ourselves and our clients? But in regards to like change perspectives, I'd say probably even when I look at my off season this year, it's like the areas that have improved the most have been the areas where I have seen the best objective performance metrics like come up. And I think most people who train long enough, they'll probably tell you the same. It's like, you know what? Throughout my training history, whenever, say, my chest presses have gone up, I've seen the muscles that are the, you know, primary movers in that movement, right? Like develop. And I think that part is so important, is especially with the trend right now in finding the perfect exercise to hit a perfect body part. I think sometimes for people, what would probably work best would be, it's like, hey, you know, like, yeah, maybe doing a dumbbell chest press this way is the most optimal thing for you on paper, but you know what, you're really good at, you know, the Smith machine with a low incline. Like when you do that, it's like we can't stop progressing. So I'd say I'd like to see people understand biomechanics, like understand why this movement might be on paper the best fit, but at the end, like the movements that you have the best history with, the movements that you have the most predictable progressions with, are that important. Like in this case, like this off season for me, what's grown the most has been my upper back and my posterior chain. And when I think about it, it's like, shoot, that's where I jumped up the most in load. It's been on my upper back rows, and it's been on my hinges, like easily. And the movements where maybe I was overly focused on, you know, finding that specific movement that really targeted that area, if I don't make progress in it, same thing's going to happen no matter how good that movement is. It's just the secondary effects, what I'm actually looking for, is not going to take place. I think powerlifters are great examples of this, because the name of the game for them, in order to compete, in order to continually stay at the level you are or progress, you have to see objective performance changes. And you'll see it with all sorts of powerlifters that are put together very differently, where maybe for them, like a bench press is not a very good exercise for their pecs, because the name of the game is progression. Years go by and you're like, whoa, these are like very good, like pecs and shoulders and triceps on this person. It's crazy. The biggest legs I've seen on natural athletes, especially in the posterior chain, was in a USAPL Nationals like warm-up room. And yeah, this is like, you know, they're genetically great athletes, but so are the ones at like WNBF Worlds. But I just remember seeing everyone warm up. I was kind of like behind the platforms, and I'm like, man, everyone's got these like huge glutes, these huge hamstrings, because again, the name of the game is like progression. So I'd say that's something I'm trying to encourage athletes to do a little bit more, is like, okay, I know you know that this is the best movement for that area. Maybe it's a diagonal pull
but you're a monster at pull-ups. Like when you do pull-ups, for some reason, that movement just clicks with you. You get super excited. Again, it gamifies things for you. You're constantly progressing. Like you're obviously very good at this. We should probably do more pull-ups with like load or something. So that's probably something I've kind of switched up a little bit, is like, I think, especially when athletes really, really good at something, or you just get very predictable outcomes with a certain movement, even if it's not the best movement, I'd say that should probably be the movement you are doing most of the time. Because again, most people who train, regardless of level, it's like, even at this level, even after 20 something years of training, if I make objective progress on something, I will see regional growth to that area.
Man, you made me think of, I'm sure you know him, Jesus Olivares, Mega Gojira on Instagram. My boy repping 900 pounds in the squat for like 5 reps, if I recall correctly. Well, I'm sure he has quite the size of his quadriceps. So it goes to show that perhaps some sort of minutia in exercise selection can have its place. But overall, I think it's really good practice just to focus on progress. Even if all models fall short, I think it's sufficiently good for us to make progress and also to keep peace of mind, you know, because the knowing that you're making progress, I think psychologically also drives your motivation, drives your self-efficacy and all that good stuff that we want in ourselves and in our clients. So it's good to hear it from you, to being aware of the minutia, of the details, but keeping it simple in the day-to-day basis, for me at least, it's so valuable.
You, Danny, sometimes said simple but not simplistic, right? Is I know what's the context. I know the data, but it doesn't change my way I coach, because it's center person coach, right? It's what you prefer, what you enjoy, where you progress at, how is your adaptation to this? Because you may be making progress, and somehow we are not seeing meaningful adaptations. I don't know if someone who, damn, I progress really well on military press, but my shoulder hurts. You know, every time I go ahead and then return to this weight, damn, again, or this volume, right? So the adaptation is not getting there, right? So what I have to work to maybe get aboard on this problem and then go past, right? But that's where we evaluate. Let's try this variation. Let's try this other implementation. Maybe a bar, maybe a machine, maybe dumbbells, maybe front raises with cable. I don't know. But let's find what works with your military press so it won't hurt anymore, right? But it's center person coaching. And that's what we want to talk about today. So it's right. The data is important, yeah, but I don't think if elbow extensions with your elbow above your head, right, this position, and then you do extensions, but this hurts my shoulder, then don't do it. It's that simple. Don't do it. No, we don't have to. It's best evidence. No, I don't know. I don't care. You want progress. It will hurt. You don't gonna have a good experience with it. You don't want to do it again, maybe in 6 months, you know? And that's what we want to talk about here. It's simple, but not simplistic.
You make me think, Juan, well, if it hurts here, don't do it. So it's going to be, let's say, $200. So see you in next month. See if it hurts. We go from there.
So I'm a sports physician, so I do that. No, not really.
Right now, you talk about the progress, Berto, and something that I'm living right now is a lot of my exercise change with specific cues, you know, like some techniques, strategy. I call them the Berto hacks because I learned a lot of about you and about the coaching of Lau, you know, the soft lockout, make some pauses, And that changed a lot the execution, you know. You can have, in my case, I can feel more the work. And I example is in my, I do the pendulum squat. And years ago, I used to make them with a lot of weight. And my technique, definitely, it was not the best. And right now that I have a specific quotes, like, okay, you need to go full range of motion. And just before going to the bottom, 2 seconds pause, and then full effort to go up, you know? How do you manage these cues, or how do you determine that, okay, I think that we can do this and have a better stimulus, a better result? Another example, in the program of Dirk, I saw that he first do the leg extension with a shortened bias, just one set, and then he goes to the pendulum, no? I really admire this kind of strategies, because he's not like, okay, the paper say me that, so I'm doing it. It's like a lot of the experience you have with your athletes, with your clients. And can you tell us a little bit more about this, your Berto hacks?
Yeah, so a lot of this is almost trying to do the exact opposite of what I remember, like when I started powerlifting, like what the cueing was there. It's like, I just remember squatting and people are telling you, it's like, okay, like, you know, activate your lats, bring the bar down, you know, like hold your breath, keep tension on the hips, push the knees out. And there's like 5-6 different cues going through your mind. So I usually try to minimize things to like one cue. Like, it's like, okay, but how can I fix most of this with like one cue? And you just generally get them to a point, because we see two kinds of like bad technique at the gym. Like, you see that sort of bad technique that you're like, this isn't going to progress for very long, or they're going to get hurt. And then there's like that other sort of like not so good technique where you're like, oh, as they get stronger and they progress, they'll kind of figure out different strategies and they'll kind of like learn it on their own. Like, that's usually where, like, you know, technique that's not great yet, like, usually falls into. It's like, one, this is going to end poorly. This one, you know, I think she'll figure out the squat once there's like more weight on her. And I think that'll keep her like heels down, and she'll be able to hit that depth all the time. Like, that's usually where I categorize like technique into one of those two categories. But the person that's like prone to like, well, this is wrong, we need to intervene now before this just becomes our habit, this is just the only way we know how to do things, I usually try to look for just one thing that I can change that puts them all of a sudden in that other category where it's just like, all right, it's not perfect yet, but I think as time goes on, it's going to kind of sort itself out. They will get feedback from their own body, and eventually it'll be, you know, passing grade technique or beyond, ideally. So yeah, you just don't want to have too many things going like through an athlete's head. Usually when I am doing technique checks with athletes, especially my weekly ones, I try to only focus on so many movements at a time. So I'll have them send everything. And yeah, there might be things like with all these other movements we need to sort out, but I'm like, you know what? Like, we're going to leave the curl alone. Like, it's not perfect, but we can get back to that. Let's get these first five items so that they can just focus on these things only at once, especially with people who aren't, you know, haven't been doing this for too long. You don't want to overload them with too much, because also at the same time, they're just going to feel like every day I go in and most everything I'm doing is obviously not like good. Like, you don't want them feeling that way. So the things that are of most urgency, we address those. And then when it comes to like technique suggestions, just try to find the simplest way to fix as many things at once. And hopefully that can be one, maybe two cues, but that usually works better, because people, again, they do better when they feel like they're playing, as opposed to like it's all these instructions and this list of things to do with like every rep. So that's my general approach to getting people to eventually, hopefully at some point, move the way Dirk moves in the gym.
And Alberto, I'm really curious to hear your mostly opinion as a natural bodybuilding aficionado, fanatic, and lover of the sport. How bright is the future of natural bodybuilding? Because let's say last WMBF Worlds, you could see people like Dirk in your corner But you could see Babakar and also the professor battling alongside, and you see this crazy SP6 man. What do you think? Do you think natural bodybuilding at some point could be a little bit more popular, or perhaps accepted that it's a possibility to compete as natural and look like those guys, if you have the right parents, of course? Do you think there's some sort of, let's say, bright future for natural bodybuilding to become more appealing to the masses?
Yeah, no, I think so. I think it just needs the right transport system, because I remember shortly after I started powerlifting was just powerlifting. It's like when I'd go to a meet, like very clearly when you got there, you realize that, man, I have a stick and it's a gunfight, right? Like that's just what powerlifting was. And all of a sudden, then there was this obvious like drug-free option. And I was like, oh, wow, this is crazy. And I remember in California, the big old state of California, there was one meet that you could do that was tested. And that was really exciting. And I thought, oh, that's plenty. That's good enough for me. But like you fast forward it to now, like the Sheffield, the big powerlifting meet's happening in, I think, like 2 weeks. And, you know, speaking of Jesus, I think last time he competed, he brought home like $40,000 or something like that from a powerlifting meet. So I just think bodybuilding is a lot more marketable, because I think regardless of what anyone says, most people who go to a gym, you hear a bunch of different goals, but kind of high on that list, even though they don't say it, is like, I want to look better in my birthday suit. You know, every day when I wake up, I want to be like, yeah, like, you know, you can't buy this outfit, right? I think that's appealing to people, you know? And I think, even though, like you said, a lot of these top athletes, it's like, you know, well, you know, it's the product of, you know, hundreds of generations of the right people having children, and that's how we got there, and that's hard to beat. Nevertheless, it's inspiring, because you know they weren't born in that way. You know, if they didn't train, they wouldn't have looked that way. You know, so yeah, I think it's a very marketable sport, because everyone has at least some vested interest in that, even if they're not necessarily gym rats right now. And there's something extra sexy about it when it's like, you know what, this was done without the use of drugs, primarily steroids. Now that gets people really thinking, it gets their imagination going in regards to like, well, what can I do with myself? Okay, maybe I can't look like the professor, but maybe I could do something for myself. So I think it's all there. Like, I think it just tugs at all the right parts of human emotions. It has a health component to it as well. It's right there, man. It's right there. And it just needs the proper pushes over the next decade. But I don't see why it can't be something similar to that, you know, in the next decade or so, much the same way that powerlifting did it.
I'm going to be a little selfish with this next question, talking about natural bodybuilding. What I have seen over the past, I think, 3 years, the women's bodybuilding division, I think it's exploding. And that makes me really happy, because you can see it, like, for example, the last WMBF Worlds. Like, you see Amor Fernandez, who came out of nowhere and beat Natalie Hayes, which was the champion last year, but not only the champion in WMBF, but also the champion in other many federations, organizations. And I think that also maybe translates to people we coach now. For example, I can see now the female clients I'm getting are now more interested in their upper body workouts, you know? It's not only I want big legs and big glutes. They ask me, I want, maybe they don't say a bigger back, but I want a stronger back, and I want to do my first pull-up. So I think it's really interesting to me to see that phenomenon happening, like in the highest level of natural bodybuilding, but how that also like goes down to the people that are getting started now. I don't know if you have observed the same. Like you can talk about For example, the clients that you're now getting, like female clients, maybe that perspective has shifted. Like not only I want to compete in bodybuilding, but I want to compete in women's bodybuilding or maybe fit body, but you know, like these more muscular divisions. Do you think that's also happening?
Yeah, so I'm a draw back from, again, like the powerlifting, because you said something there that I think is incredibly correct in that, okay, maybe we can't relate to the Babacars, like in regards to like, you know, what they're able to achieve, but that trickles down to everyone else. Like I remember when for men, like the 500 pound deadlift was just amazing. Like if you got the 500 pound deadlift, it's like, at this point, it's like, if he wants to smoke a cigarette while he's deadlifting, let him. He's the man, you know? Now it's kind of become the 600 pound deadlift because like as powerlifting's pushed up now that, so as these guys push up, everyone else kind of follows, like the middle of that bell curve kind of starts to shift in that direction. And with women's training, I remember when I first started lifting, the way the weight room usually looked was it was maybe in a big commercial gym, like 30 guys out there and maybe two women. And now all the other women were just doing cardio. And that was just how it was. And no one really thought about it. And it's crazy because intuitively, like you could just see, you'd see that, okay, the people who are lifting weights, they're not doing everything, right? But they just look healthier. They have a better body composition compared to the people that are just, you know, playing on the treadmills. And fast forward to now, it's like most weight rooms, especially here in the US, I can say they're kind of 50-50. And women are kind of attacking all muscle groups and are generally interested in you know, being strong and being more muscular. And we've kind of slowly, the, not that this should matter, but the level of what is acceptable muscle mass for women, it's like it's increased. And I think that's important because, you know, I think for a lot of people, unless they know that this is really what they want. I know for me, like I remember seeing old bodybuilding magazines and I'm like, oh, that's kind of gross. I would never want to look like that. Of course, like it took me kind of like, you know, leveling up and I'm like, okay. I'm getting grosser and grosser, but I'm okay with this. So like public portrayal of what's appropriate to some extent does matter, because otherwise it could discourage people from like even getting started or trying really hard. But now it's quite crazy because like I'll see a lot of my female friends that lift weights and they'll get like gross comments from like these guys. Not a positive thing, but I'm like, this guy doesn't even lift, but he thinks that's kind of appealing. It's like, okay, that kind of tells me about where society is in regards to like what is an acceptable level of muscularity. And I think especially with women, geez, because I think most men at some point, they're like, yeah, I wish I was a little bit stronger. Whereas I think a lot of women who don't train never really think about that until they feel it for themselves. And then they feel it and they're like, oh, wow, this is great. Like, I don't care how far I take this. I'm gonna take this as far as I want because this feels amazing. This feels appropriate for me. And I think we're starting to see that a whole lot more. I think, yeah, one in part because of like the athletes that are kind of pushing up the limits of especially what you can do naturally, but also just as a society, we're starting to value muscle a little bit more now. And I don't think it's just for men the way it used to be years ago. And I think even better, it used to be like maybe 5-7 years ago, just about like the butt. And like now women are like, you know, no, I just don't want the butt. I want everything. I want arms. I want a bicep vein. I want calves. And that's just really good to see. Cause I don't know, it's a very beautiful sort of body art. I think it's like our tattoos in a way, like the bodybuilding. And you know, your tattoos tell your story, and I think women are starting to finally like wake up to that a little bit more. And again, and part of that because of the natural athletes that are doing like so well. And especially when you see these women in person, you're like, oh, they don't look like Ronnie Coleman. They kind of just look like athletic. They look like they play, I don't know, they look like they do track and field, you know, something like that.
Alberto, we really appreciate having you here. I was watching every one of us when you were talking, and we're all like we can't believe it, you know? We're having such a great time, and we're really happy to have you here. but we also want to be respectful of your time and want to have you again sometime, maybe later in the year. So is there anything else you think is important for coaches out there to know about how to be a great coach, how to be this, not only a coach, but also like a mentor for the people they're working with, how to make this impact, this positive impact in their lives? Because I think that's what we're all about. So like any closing words you would like to share?
Yeah, I guess just kind of the general theme of this podcast, the, you know, the whole, yeah, look at the data, you know, pay attention to the science, because, you know, I think most importantly what that does for people, it keeps folks from harming their athletes. You know, that's really important. We're not in the business of causing harm. But I think it's okay to throw in things into programs, put your twist on it. If you think it's going to play to the psychology of the athlete, like whether it fits their strengths, you know, addresses their weakness in a compassionate way. And there's nothing wrong with having these additives that are maybe benign, right? That, you know, okay, maybe they're not what's driving the progress necessarily, but they're not necessarily, you know, really delaying it. But the athlete enjoys it, and it makes them feel competent, it makes them feel proactive, it makes them feel like they're doing something. So, and also on that note, this is kind of a step even more in, like, I guess, the risque direction. I think it's completely okay to have an experimental component to your training with the athletes, as long as you just, especially once they're a little bit more mature, as long as they understand that, you know what, this is kind of a chance we're taking. I don't know if this is going to work, but let's find out. Because again, that kind of gamifies things. It makes it fun. And I do that all the time where I'm like, you know what? I think you are the perfect candidate for this experiment. Let's try it, because there might be some great rewards. And if there's not, well, okay, we can kind of cross that off the list. So, you know, at the end, yeah, it's like exactly what bodybuilding, the actual sport is. It's like, it's sports, but it's like, it's science, but it's like slash art at the same time, and no different with the coaching.
Just on my side of things, I want to extend a big thank you to Alberto, not only for doing the podcast, but also for inspiring us all to continue bodybuilding, to better ourselves as coaches, and to keep expanding our horizons in regards to paying attention to the science, but also paying attention to the client in front of us. So thanks a lot, Alberto, for taking the time. We really do appreciate it. And I'm sure our audience would also appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you a lot, Alberto, and it was nice to meet you. Really, an honor.
Likewise, Juan.
So, thank you, Alberto. You are, a referent for us, and it's so, I really enjoy to see people who are really passionate about the bodybuilding and can help a lot of people achieving their goals. So, thanks for all the knowledge. Every quote you give us, it's like very important, so because we can apply that with our service, being a better coaches, being better persons. And thanks, Alberto.
Gracias, Sergio. Thank you.
Muy bien, chicos, pues muchas gracias por acompañarnos en otro episodio de Hypertrophy. Y pues nada, nos estamos viendo en una semana con otro interesante episodio sobre coaching, especialmente coaching en el ámbito, más bien en México, que es donde estamos y donde conocemos un poco más sobre esta perspectiva. Y hasta pronto, nos vemos. 3, 2, 1.